welcome to FemPoem. Today's guest is Vabene Elikiam-Fiaci, also known as Craziness Artist. She's a very radical activist from Ghana, performing around the world. I think she's one of the most radical artists I've ever met in my life, knowing exactly what she's doing. She's born in Kumasi, Ghana in 1981. Her art is contributing to social changes. She challenges the misrepresentation and misinterpretations of our collective narratives on gender, sexuality, body, history, and identity in post-colonial societies. Her works investigate in the culturality of gender stereotypes and sexual misrepresentation, questioning the extreme quest for social cultural supremacy over marginalized people. Her art is mirroring also the political injustice that happens to trans around the world. She's confronting with her performances all the violence and the vulnerability, the idea of the homo sacer, challenging also the human sense of mortality and objectification of otherness. She uses her body as a thought-provoking tool and material, exploring rituals of identity, gender fluidity, and a sense of belongingness. Her biopolitical pronoun is she, he, it, and she says as a note on her homepage, anyone, any institution can responsibly use any pronoun of their preference for me. Otherwise, just use shit. May you introduce yourself?
I'm Vabene Elikiam-Fiaci, Kofi, and also known as Craziness Artist, a multidisciplinary artist, performer, curator, and a director of PIA. I got the name Craziness Artist since 2010-11 when I was studying painting and sculpture in KNUST, and this name was an agency of re-figuring myself and also re-establishing my own knowledge of becoming an artist, not necessarily being authenticated by an institution or any regulation as what I should do as an artist or not. So for me, craziness is a pun borrowing from to be crazy for something, and to be crazy for something is an idiom of extreme passion. So you could say you are crazy for your country, that means you are extremely in love with your country. You are crazy for your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your partner. It's an extreme expression of your love for the person. You are crazy for your parent, you are crazy for whatever you do. So for me, to be crazy is to be in extreme state of love for something. So Craziness Artist was a name that I chose myself to define my new journey, which I did not even know where the destination was, but it's just for further investigation into life. And then I decided to call myself Craziness Artist, passion for art. And then between 2010 to 2011, I was more in conventional studies of painting, and we were given some opportunity also for experimental explorations. And then after 2012 and 2013, begin my new journey into investigating all these social constructs, the prejudice and gender stereotypes, and how that conflict with our sexuality, and how that also exposes to invisible vulnerabilities. And that led into my performance that began to develop early 2013. And to date, and still ongoing, that I am more ritually performing different kind of works and different kind of political conversation and dialogues in my work.
What does the word identity mean for you?
I don't even know whether it does exist. If it does exist, it's just about how any individual would love to define him, her, or themselves, whether as racial identity, cultural identity, gender, sexual, whatever form of identity, it has to resonate with individual feelings and expression. Yeah, but as I mentioned earlier, that for me, I don't know whether it exists, is because of my colonial identity. That severally we have been trying to establish that something is not African and something is African. And ever since these conversations, I try to debunk the existence of identity in terms of this, because I think that what is African identity or African culture, I've been several decades or centuries or years, several decades being already dissolved in other colonial narratives and colonial existence. So it's something I still battle with, even in my practice. What does it mean to be an African? So identity would always differ in context of what we are looking for and what kind of identity we are talking about here. And the same thing resonates in my gender identity, that I am an avatar. And being an avatar also means that I don't have a peculiar or a specific identity. I could take any form at any time and any mood at any time. So I'm just an avatar, neither male nor female, just extremely fluid and be able to change form and change state.
So you're working with multiplicity.
I don't know whether multiplicity is the best language for me, but I'm working with infinity. Yeah, infinity of layers. I just think that is it.
Can you talk about your political activism?
It has to do with all forms of justice and just the sense of respect and equal right to any human being, regardless of your religion, your class, your gender, your race, and whatever it is. What I think must be seen is to be, the first thing we should see is to see human. And that was the necessity to my earlier performances. Like I mentioned earlier, I studied painting, and it was that agency that transformed my practice into interactive works, into intervention wise, into performance wise. So that is my activism, and such is to address the human emergencies, maybe living beyond or living before my time, or I'm just so futuristic somehow, imagining what are the possibilities in the next 20 years, in the next 30 years, in the next 40 years. How can we address those things before they happen? How can we arrest the situation before it presents itself? Because we keep failing to see where we are going to by the decisions we are making today. So that is the agencies I'm dealing with, and that is the activism, how to resolve all the gender conflicts in my country. I think also my work is basically meant for my own geographical location. So how do we resolve all this sexual violence, especially trans identity, homophobic, and all these things? How do we arrest the situation before it escalates? Also for me is to ask myself again, like, what has been before now, and how have our situation been like? And if I come back again to the trans conversation, they were existing in almost every normal human community from the beginning of making. So why now is becoming a subject of violence? Why now things are just cannot be tolerated, cannot be accepted, cannot be dealt with? And then I begin to investigate my own culture to understand that these people were living freely without any harm in the past or just in a few years ago, and then because of religious infiltrations, like Western religious infiltrations, and those ideologies, now it begins to give them different narratives and different representations, and begin to redefine them beyond what they were and what they would have been. So how do we deal with all these things? And that is why it becomes important for me to use performance also as a potent language to dismantle all these misrepresentations and prejudices or stereotypes. Yeah, so for my activism, basically, it's about human justice or social justice, and is strongly to oppose any form of violence, whether it is gender or racial, any form of violence. And also because I'm so much touched by regularly hearing of lynching or mob justice in the continent or on the continent. Yeah. So yeah, for me, this is it. And that also led to my own pronoun, because it's also not activism, where I refer to myself as shit, rejecting all the Western imposed pronouns on me as he, she, or even it. So for me, he, she, it is Euro-American shit, because it has never existed in my own culture, my own dialect. Yeah, so this is why I can again say how we have already been erased, even when we are fighting for what is African. I don't know where we are going to find it, and what it means to be black. I don't know where we are going to find it, and what it means to be a Ghanaian. I don't know where we are going to find it. Yeah, because what we embrace now and what we are being nurtured to be is so much with a lot of layers. Yeah, so we don't have she, we don't have he, we don't have it. Pronoun, singular pronoun represent all the pronouns. So if it is a goat, it's a, if it is a boy, it's a, if it's a girl, it's a, and this a is just everything. So we don't need to define whether it's a girl or it's a boy, because in conversation you should know who I'm referring to as a. So what's the point of telling you it's a girl I'm referring to? Yeah, so I'm also borrowing all these things and then recreating my own dialogue and pronoun, which I call the shit, because it does not really exist. So, but at the same time, if anyone call me or any of this pronoun, I'm never offended, because they are also dealing with my dead body, which has not been buried. So it still lives to them, it still lives, it's still alive. And this is the earlier colonial body that I'm dealing with. Yeah,
which was a binary
body. Which was a binary body, and not just binary, but very constructive representation of who I should be. This construction that I seek to dismantle and then just live as human is more important to me.
And you also don't draw any line between life and art. So your own life becomes a piece of art.
Yeah.
That was also what Michel Foucault said once, that he doesn't understand why something in a gallery can be a piece of art but not their own life, and that we have to develop self-techniques to create an ethic of existence in a term of aesthetic of existence. It's so beautiful that you were saying many times that how you live your everyday life, this is art.
Yeah. In some statements, I have stated that I am a walking piece of art. Yeah, so my daily life is performance, is art, and there is no singular, there is no visible separation. There is art presented to public and audience that are curated, and there is art presented to audience that are non-curated. So my daily life is presented to audience who are not curated audience. They are not aware they are experiencing a piece of art. Yeah, and then when I do other works in galleries, in spaces that is very constructive and conventional, this is works also presented to curated audience. And then people are, well, we are coming to watch art. And then in this context, everything could be accepted. But when this thing moves from the gallery and begin to walk on the street, then it creates a lot of frictions. And such frictions, I am interested in observing that friction and experiencing the friction and seeing how art can also feel vulnerable and how art does not own its own life.
It was also very interesting that you are saying that every day you're performing, and I think that everybody is performing every day their gender norms, the way of behaving in the everyday life as a man, as a woman, for example. So I think a lot of people perform the gender norms every day, but they are not aware of it. But you are aware of them and can play with them and can mirror them also and can also just sensibilize people of their own behavior, like how to behave as a so-called man. What makes a man? Is it the clothes? Is it the voice? What is it? And if you like, it would be wonderful if you also can talk about your installation, Monument of Second Skin.
Yeah, for me, like you said, for me, daily, each and everyone is performing. Each and everyone is an art piece that is not defined, that is not curated, that is not organized, that is not exhibited. And I think we live like in a certain form of social zoo without being aware of it, because the repetition, all these things are repeating itself, and then they become like normalized, and then we no longer pay attention to it. And that is why when the otherness presents itself in a new space, it becomes like a new spectacle. So this is the point. So for me, borrowing from all these things makes me understand that it does not even matter if you are non-binary, but even if you are just a cis person or you are just a binary, you subscribe to the binary structures, you are still performing all this role. You still have to perform being a male in the house, a husband in the home, a wife in the home. You have to perform all these things. If you are given the deliberation, if you are given all the freedom that could erase the nurturing and the social codes that we are enveloped with, you could have been living so much different from now.
Yes.
You could have been living so much different from now. But these social codes that are so much embedded in our system and controlling how we even behave is because we don't know it. It's because we are not aware how they were produced and they are being constantly reproduced and how we have internalized all these things and live up to it. So this is why when you live also in a very heteronormative relationship, even whether you are heterosexual or not, but you live in this normative culture, you realize that you reproduce this system, and because the codings are there and they just need to be dialed, and then we keep dialing them without knowing. So borrowing this system is the same reason for establishing the rituals of becoming, and prior to the rituals of becoming must be the second skin, and that's the monument of second skin, and that is to explore our own first skin and then be able to ask questions: what does it mean to own the first skin, and what does it mean to gain the power in the second skin? What is the power relation between your first skin and your second skin? Which of them makes you more vulnerable, more fragile? Which of them makes you more accepted? Which of them changes your identity? Which of them leaves you untouchable? You know, so for me, this costumes are my second skins. that I could perform all these rituals and walk into this costume, and then there is a transition, there is a transformation, there is a new life, there is a rebirth, just in a second skin. So with the second skin, you could become vulnerable and you could also become accepted, depending on the context and the location and the people in which you found yourself. So, and that is why my rituals are more based on the social evocations and productions than any biological and chemical transformation. Yeah. So the Monument of Second Skin is one of the most important installations for me in the performance rituals of becoming. Yeah, because even performing this ritual and becoming is an internal becoming, is an internal belongingness, is an internal sense of association and sense of identity, and is an internal sense of classification. And then people are not able to relate. People are not able to, because if you go naked with your penis and without boobs and you identify yourself as a woman, it's like a taboo. It's like a miracle. I don't know. It's like something to people. Like, people cannot comprehend. People cannot, because they cannot deal with your internalized identity. They cannot deal with what your psychological sense of becoming is. Because before the social body, we have already become in our mind. We have already become in our psychological state of being. So we just need to affirm that by the social representations. And that is why if you even feel like a woman, being a biological female, you live up to it, you dress up to it, you do the makeups up to it. That does not mean that you don't feel like a woman. But this is to be performed for others to accept you as such. So it's not even an acceptance for only ourselves. We have accepted it, and then we need others to accept it. We need confirmation, we need affirmation, we need an establishment. And this we need to establish. And that is a ritual of becoming. So if I perform all these internal rituals and exhibit them in a very social ritual, and then there is a change, and then there is something that can, there's a testimony, there is an evidence, and this is what I'm dealing with also in the Monument of Second Skin, and between that and the rituals of becoming.
And all the clothes that you have in your ritual of becoming, they are all, let's say, female clothes.
Yeah.
So it's also kind of like a reflection of that femininity is culturally defined,
yeah,
based on society's understanding of gender.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so you are performing what is this normative role, mm-hmm, of being a woman.
Mm-hmm.
That's also very interesting,
yeah,
that you don't choose other clothes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like I mentioned, when we have internalized the sense of belongingness, then we need an affirmation, or we need to confirm it.
Yes.
We need a testimony, we need an evidence. And that is how come these rituals are repeated regularly in everyone's life. Even if you are a born sex female, you would perform this once you have recognize yourself as female. You don't go to the market just buy any costume, but you are very concerned about the kind of costume you buy that represents you, that actually present what you feel and how you feel. And so for me, in the same dialogue, is for the trans identities, that people have the choice and have to exhibit and exercise their internal feelings, and this is why the ritual began itself. And for me, like I said, when art becomes alive, attitude becomes form. So, because attitude which is not a tangible thing, could gain form, and when it gains form, it becomes very provocative. So, and then art is already has gained that life. So this is in this is what I live in. So when art becomes life, attitude becomes form. So art in a gallery ceases to have its own life, and therefore its attitude is just not having a form for people to debate on or to contemplate on. Imagine the artworks, the nude sculptures in the galleries, begin to move onto the street and walk and speak and could hug you and could shake hands with you. It is only then we understand the form of this attitude. Imagine the very movies that we watch in the television and we appreciate them. And these characters with very horrific faces that we will produce. Imagine we could live, these characters could live in a daily life with us and walk on the street and wave you and hug you and kiss you and speak to you. It is only then we understand those attitude gaining forms, and the forms will be more heavier than even the visual, like the work itself. So for me, this were the thing that inspired my merging or synthesis of art and life to see how people deal with it. Because if I perform drag, even on stage, in homophobic communities, some homophobic communities, they will still appreciate it because it's acted, it's temporal, is guerrillized, is in a museum state, is objectified, so it has no life, so there's no threat, there is no fear to it. Like an example we saw in this bar, this guy drag and dancing and people enjoying it. But imagine people from this space in their daily life begin to live to that state. And then you would have seen it in the video I showed you of the police stripping this innocent woman off just because she has a dick. So she does not need to dress like the so-called stereotypical female. But if she does that as a musician or on stage, the same police will pay $100 of tickets to go and watch it. So this is when it's gained life and gained form, is different to deal with. Yeah, so this is it. Yeah, and it's complex even for me myself to deal with it. Yeah, because
how does the criminalization of crossing these gender norms or just like acting out different norms than expected, how does it get punished here in Inga?
It is not criminalized.
Yeah, but it's a criminalization in a way of...
Yeah, so it's not criminalized.
Yes.
It's because we are not aware of our rights. And it's because you are just becoming a homosexual. It does not mean it's also criminalized. The fact that you become homosexual does not mean it's criminalized. It just means that you just become like a cursed body within these spaces where these things are not seen as a social norms. So there is no law against it. But once you are this homosexual, it also means that those who fall within the right norms has the right to deal with you any way they could deal with you. And then they are not punished for doing anything. So neither of you is criminalized, but they have the right. You don't have the right. So they can beat you. It feels like they can beat you because these are police. These are security. These are people who are supposed to be protecting you. And these are people who bring you up to their station and strip you naked. Like it happened to me in the airport. You know, so the question is, what
what is the legal backing? What is the point? What crime has any of us committed to deserve this humiliation? And there's nothing stated, even internationally, I have not read it yet, that is an international law. No. There are other countries who are very conservative countries, and then they make these specific laws for their country. But it's not an international law anywhere. And in my country, it's not, there's no law to this, of cross-dressing, trans identity, there is no law to it. There is no law. I have not read it and I've not seen it, and it is not there. So to arrest a cross-dresser, a transgender person, a non-binary person, based on your personal confusion of who, which gender the person belongs to, should rather be the crime, not the person who is dressed that way, because it committed no crime. Like, I don't see any crime. You go to the market and choose your dress. I go to the market and choose my dress. Why does mine become a crime? And this is why I spoke earlier on about also how colonialism has already erased who we are and who we should have been. And then I cannot really authenticate any form of identity in terms of Africanness or this and that. Because these dresses we wear are very westernized. If you, as you are in Ghana, I don't think you see anything that you might have perceived going to see in Africa as Africans in some dresses. The dresses we wear is the dress you wear. There are different styles of sewing them, but most of the times you see us buying all these dresses. All the dresses in my studio, most of them are second-hand dresses from West, from Europe. So this is our reality. This is the life we live in. So who actually imposed these dresses on us? And who defines who should wear this and who should not wear this? I wished that I was born earlier before colonialism, just to see how we were living and how our human relations were. Because I am also not blaming colonialism for all these effects, but I'm blaming humanity for failing. Yeah, and these other ones are just contributing or have just contributed to our failures. Perhaps even if there was no colonialism in Africa or in Ghana, perhaps we will still come to this era behaving the same way without colonialism, without Christianity, without Islamic religion, without any influence from outside. Perhaps humanity will come to this stage where we will still behave this way. So I just think we have just failed as humans and we are still failing. Yeah, so these other things just serve as catalysts. Just contributed to it and make it more faster, like very cancerous. Yeah.
Part of your art and also your political activism is also your project of filming during your travels and what's happening on the borders and especially in the airports. Would you like to talk about this project?
Yeah, that is the Invisible Body. And the Invisible Body is one of the only, the only project that I have embarked on without me being in it several times. It was only in few instances you would see me in it. What you see normally is my passport and then people dealing with my passport. So dealing with the Invisible Body. So this is one reason for the title Invisible Body. And also because the image in the passport is invisible to them. Because they look at this image and they are still looking for the image because they cannot accept the image in the passport they see. They cannot deal with it. They cannot come to terms with the image they see. So even though the image is before them, it's like an invisible image. It's like, no, I can't see it. In some documentation, you will see how close they will raise this to their eye as though they were blind to see. you know, it's just that state of confusion you put those institutions in, because they cannot deal with their own policies, because they cannot deal with the limitations that they have created. Because all these borders are also very binary borders. And then they have failed to understand that there are thousands of different people that could pass there who would not necessarily fall within these spaces that were created for them, like created for the binaries. So for me, it's also negotiating and navigating spaces that are not initially created for people that are non-binary. And how do we tell our own experiences? How do we tell our own stories? How do we represent ourselves?
What is also interesting is which parts of the landscape of the skin is important to them. Because according to the biometrical things that are required, it's the fingerprint, the fingerprint, and it's the symmetry of the face. And you didn't do anything to your face, but they want you to strip down all of your clothes just to see your genitals.
Yeah,
there's a fishality of society, so we are living in a society where it's all about the face. But in this term, people cannot accept the face alone, cannot accept the fingerprint alone, cannot accept the iris scan. They need to humiliate the other person, to put them in a very, very uncomfortable position, put them in the corner and force them to strip down all of the clothes just to deal with their own prejudice and their own confusion that they have, not being able to combined picture that they see in the passport with the person standing in front of them.
Yeah, I agree to that. And I also think, for me, they themselves are very perverse, and is a certain, for me, it's also like a very perversive curiosity or something. Curious perversion, I don't know. I don't know the term to use for them, but this is what I see, because it's like it auto satisfies certain pleasure for them while they do these things. And that is why sometimes I also say most homophobics are homosexuals themselves, but they cannot deal with that, they cannot accept it within, so they are not really fighting the people, they are fighting themselves from in. And then they put their violence on the others, because they can't, one, trust themselves, so they can't deal with it. They just can't deal with it. So it makes people to become also, very phobic to these things. So the same thing repeats on the borders, because even I don't just get it, because in a passport, you don't have your body in the passport, you have your face in the passport. And then they have to look at your dick to authenticate your passport.
Yes, they have to push the genitals in the passport.
So for me, yes, I really said in one of the airport that, do you know something? You can tell your officials that the new passport and visas, they should put dicks in the passport. And that should help you, because that is what you want to see, to authenticate that this passport belongs to this person. Because you cannot see my face and want them to see my boob or my butt. For what reason? What? I don't know. I just can't make any sense out of it. But it's also not a very easy journey, because your life become, like, for me, my practice has made everything of me vulnerable. Yeah. I could travel and never come back one day. Yeah. Because who knows where things will get to us. Because I'm just surviving as I survive. I'm just surviving it at the moment. Yeah. Sometimes not until you become a victim, you don't know how vulnerable, the extreme vulnerable you are. So.
And decriminalization. Yeah. Is against your becoming, because what we were also talking about some days ago or weeks ago, it's becoming means not being A anymore, but not being yet So being always in transition, and just because refusing of having just like one identity, and identity symbolizes a unity, but I think there's no like unity within humans. We're not one. I think even like in everybody, they are living at least 5 or 10 different characters. And I think they are living like thousands of sexes within the body, within everybody. And it's just a lie to construct this myth called self and say, okay, you have to have just one identity. And if you self-multiply, or if you have more than one identity, then you are in trouble. I see that in very different areas of your life. If you're doing a lot of things, nobody believes you because you don't have just like one social role, because you change all the time, or you change roles. And so many people don't want to see that. They just want to have like one identity, one sex, one gender, like binary, and like a binary way of thinking too. Like you're either this or that. There's no other way. And this is so interesting how this kind of like becomes a crime, or even so many people struggle with it when they have like, or they know and they show also that they are more than just like one social identity.
Yeah, that's the point. It's like, it's boxing. So everything must be in the box. So this is a box for the cats, and this is the box for the puppies. So if you cannot stay in the box, then they are not sure whether you are a cat or you are a puppy. And then they don't know how to deal with you, because it's also our power relation. You need a frame to be able to exercise your power. But if that frame is not there, it's difficult for you to know the level of power you have on the person or not. And here is becoming a woman is more difficult than becoming a man. Maybe from my cultural background and maybe from my personal observation and experiences, it's not by a research claim. But becoming a woman is more difficult than to become a man. Because also the hierarchy is as though to be man is to be closer to God. So to be man is higher on the hierarchy. Those who believe in God knows there's God. And then after God is man. So for a woman to become man, you are closer. You are getting closer. So you are gaining more recognition and you're becoming more human. To be man, you're becoming more human. So if you get trans men, in some societies, they feel like, okay, they can have an equal position and equal right with the men because they are trans men. But to become woman is like descending that ladder. So you are coming down the ladder. Whilst others are wishing to climb the ladder, you are coming up the ladder. And then you lose the rights of being. So in this sense, you are even lesser than woman. You are neither man nor woman, but at the same time, you have lost more power than even woman. So, because if you see how cis women will treat trans women on the border, it's for me, it was more violent than to see even the men treating, because like it's so crazy. For if you see how I was treated at the border by cis women, I pitied them, of course, immediately. Yeah, because I don't know how many of us understand until when these cis women in these security services got the right to have such a job. If not for the fight of people fighting for human rights, equality, equity, and all those stuff, I don't know whether they would find themselves in these positions. But they don't even know their own history, their own liberation. They don't know it. They don't know They don't know how far they have gotten there. It was just meant like a cake and presented to them. So whether it was baked in an oven or it was fried in a pan, they don't care. So this is why they don't care to see other people deserving their rights. Yeah, because it was so strong experience with even these people at the border. Because now they are more closer to men, all in panties like men, having badges like men, in caps like men. So they feel like they are more equal than us. So this is the point. So it's also a power relation. And that power relation is very much strong on the hierarchy, on the ladder. And when we follow this, you will realize that anything outside the binary is less than the two binary, like less than the male, female. Only in some situation that you will see trans men becoming more stronger than the trans women. And also this is also depending on which society you find yourself, because in some countries, lesbians are more vulnerable and the gays are just free. And in other countries, gays are more vulnerable and lesbians are just free. Like I think in South Africa, one of his, Zamli Moholi, who has been over the years revealing the struggle of lesbians and trans men of their identity in South Africa, would explain to you the struggle that non-binary females have to undergo just to survive. Whereas in Ghana, nobody really talks about lesbians. Nobody, you hardly would hear very strong violence against women in terms of like non-binary women, but for men would suffer any form of violence as if it become possible for people. Yeah, so it's always about gays. Yeah, so it also depends which setting you find yourself, and then it is the experience is based on that. Because also in societies like this, lesbianism is a pleasure to the patriarchy. It's a pleasure to the cis males. It's a pleasure to the macho societies. So it's just like going to these clubs where you see strippers and you sit down to watch them. And yeah, so this is how it is to them. So it satisfies their fantasies, their sensualities and stuff. So this is why it's not a problem to them. But for them to see males, it's like devaluing the ego of being males. Yeah, for me this is how I feel. This is why I think it's so strong for them. Because it's mirroring them and they don't want to see it. It's like people who are so much not content with their own appearance, it's difficult for you to see yourself in a mirror and to come to terms that this is you. So this is what it presents in some societies, that seeing gay relationship is mirroring these males themselves, and then it's so scary to them. But seeing lesbians does not mirror them. It mirrors their pleasure, and they are interested to see their own pleasures.
How does the LGBTQ community react to trans women in Ghana?
Oh yeah, in Ghana it's not really so defined. But it's interesting, and I think there is something going on. There is so much learning going on there. Because in the LGBT, I'll be giving actually a lecture on two subjects, hopefully next month. And yeah, and this is one, this topic is one of them. But then it's because in the LGBTQI+, there is much more voice of the gays than any other person there. So I constantly have been battling with this ideology and this explanation and this teaching that LGBTQ+I has several people in it. it's not just about the gays, it's not just about the lesbian, it's not just about the trans, but it's a larger community than we can imagine. But it's also very interesting to see how much some gays think they are the gods of this society or this community, and then all the rest are just under them. Sometimes very abusive, because you read statements like, if you are not gay, then why do you cross dress? And this happened because someone was being abused for cross dressing, and then the conversation came, and then some gays were like, yes, why would you cross dress or dress like a woman if you're not gay? So that suggests that there is a certain kind of interpretation of being gay also, that gays must have the woman and the man, and so one must be acting the woman and the other must be acting the man. So it's as though two masculine men cannot be in love, you know? It's as though two masculine men cannot be in love. It's as though two beautiful, feminine, extremely feminine women cannot be in love. It's as though two feminine men cannot be in love. For me, this is what I seek to understand, and I seek to see happening in the future, where we can understand that there are a lot of mappings in this. I'm a lesbian, and how would that be possible? Because this is what people cannot understand, and even in some LGBT groups, they cannot understand. And I'm a proud lesbian. I never hide it. I'm just not so much sexually active, so it's not a pride for me to be always exhibiting my sexuality, because so sometimes you hardly would know what I am, because my gender is more public. Sexuality is your private feeling and your thing. Yeah, if you don't visit me, you don't even know my life in this context, because there is no need for me. But that's dealing with that complexity. But if you are bold to ask me, what do you want? What are you interested in? I will tell you my preference. But I'm proud of it. I won't feel guilty. I won't feel humiliated because of the subscriptions that people have to follow. I'm not interested in any of those subscriptions. Yeah, because also it's so unhealthy to be acting those stereotypes. This acting out put a lot of people in danger, because it must, like, these people suffering, that why would you be cross-dressing if you're not gay? Must you be gay to cross-dress? And does it mean once you cross-dress, you must become gay? People should have choices to make. People should choose that I want to dress like a woman, but I don't want to be called a woman.
It's also interesting that women can cross-dress.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
And men
cannot.
Yeah. Men cannot. They like the masculinity feels so vulnerable. It's like, oh my god. Like one skirt and then you're not a man anymore.
Exactly. Like immediately you wear the skirt, your six pack is gone. All that defines masculinity is gone. It's like the next moment your dick is missing. It's like, yes, of course, when I started my transition, I have conversations like this. Like, so do you still have dick? You know? Yes.
No,
like,
it fell off when I put lipstick on.
Exactly. I think that's a good answer I should have been giving at that time. Like, no, it's for itself. It's dissolved. Or it's melted.
That's what I was thinking of since I'm a teenager. I always thought, like, poor man. They cannot, when they have a pimple, they cannot put some makeup on. They cannot put some mascara
on. They cannot hide
it.
They cannot do anything.
Yes.
Because you have to be, yeah.
And I think this ritual of becoming every day and just like putting makeup on, putting some lines, drawing some lines on the skin, it's something very beautiful, and it's an actual transformation.
Yeah.
And also when you go to bed, you can put it off, and it's also a ritual again before going to sleep.
Yeah.
You take off the social mask.
Yeah, exactly.
And men don't have the freedom
to do that
in their everyday life. Yeah. So the masculinity is so fragile.
Yeah, it is. Like, it's insecure. And it's also very panicky.
Are you right now the only trans activist artist in Ghana?
yes, in terms of artists, I would say yes. But there are some trans invisible activists.
What is the advantage of street performances for you?
Oh, a lot of advantages. It gives me the freedom to escape institutional safe places and explore my own vulnerability and mirror the time in which we live in. I have the privilege to remain with the university community and just perform within this space and be safe with all people, all intellectuals rallying, because it makes you safe. But I prefer to deal with the street where these people have not even entered university before and they have no knowledge about all these philosophies that I'll be talking about. And that's why it's also not too important for me to talk to them by using these languages. But I want to speak their own language in terms of construction so they can relate. That is, to speak their language is performing it on the street where they have to encounter their own fear, encounter the unknown, encounter their own prejudices, their own stereotypes, and live up to it and carry it out into their houses and then keep talking about it. And the most interesting thing is when it comes to public documentation. There is one beautiful thing there, that you are trans and you perform in public where people may hate you, people may not like what you do, but they will record you. They will take their phones and record videos and go to show in their homes and share on social media. So they are helping you to spread the message, but they say they hate you. And this is the kind of culture in which we live here, which is also very varied from my experience from performing in Europe, even on the street. If I go out right now and perform on the street, I'll have audience. I don't need to make any announcement for audience. I'll have audience. But if you put the performance in a gallery, you will not have the same audience. People won't come. They will see your posters, advertisement, they won't come. But if you go and do it on the street without inviting them, they would come. So there's a difference. They will come because you are not aware they are coming because of the performance. They are passing by. So they don't feel like they have been invited. But for them to walk into your space, they won't come because that you have invited them. So on the street performances, I think it's like speaking their own public languages and mirroring their own relationship to things. And like if right now they are even killing somebody on the street now, in 3 minutes, the whole place is going to be choked with human beings. With cameras, with phones, with everything, and watching the person die. Even if I can't knock you down the street right now, people will come around. The ambulance may not even have the chance to reach you in time because people are going to block them, the whole place. You know, this system is there. So when you perform in public here, these are the experiences you're going to have. This is when you understand ephemerality of performance art, because it can lack documentation, it can lose documentation. The documentation is just by the audience. You may only begin to see pictures online and say, but you can lack very proper like gallery documentation. So that actually reveals the ephemerality of performance art, because this is their daily life. So it's not so distinguished, it's not so separated. So for me, this is why I used a lot of public performances. I think I feel more excited and fulfilled when I do public performance than when I perform in a gallery. In the gallery, when I perform, I feel like it's just for some group of human beings who can afford to come, who understand these intellectual languages. But when I perform on the street, I'm interested in the street woman, the street man, the street them that will just pass and be interested in questioning themselves of their own understanding without any knowledge of those books that people or others might have read to accept it. Yeah, so this is what it means to me in public performances.
Thank you very much for listening to Femme Poem. This was an interview with Wabene Elikiamfiechi, one of the most political performing artists from Ghana, performing around the world.